It sounded terribly impressive, didn't it? 25 years of doing meditation, almost a quarter of a lifetime. But by the time you reach my age, you will have done much more than that. So, but let me tell you, I'm nowhere near enlightenment, not near those pearly gates at all. And what did you say?
Darkness.
Not total darkness, but you know, it's sort of life is like a spiral, and I sometimes think to myself, 25 years, and I'm no better than what I was 25 years ago. But that's not true. When I look back, then I see that there has been a progress. Maybe not as much as I wanted. I've still not reached perfection. So it's just a way. And Alison here was reminding me how anti-gurus I was at one time. And we all went to meet a guruji who's Alison's guruji now. But I remember being very vociferous and saying, I don't believe in gurus. And I don't think we need gurus. Forgetting that we have teachers all our lives and they're all our gurus. But I didn't think of it like that. I thought of guru as a, you know, very special person. And then a couple of years later, I met Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. And I told him to his face that I did not believe in gurus. And he said to me, who told you to believe in gurus? And I said, well, everybody here is touching your feet and calling you Guruji. And I don't believe in that. And then he looked at me with his twinkling eyes, very sharp. And he said, you know, you do what your heart tells you to do. Not what people say, not what people do. Go to your heart. That will lead you to the correct answer. And a year later, I discovered he was my guru. But then it took me another year to even acknowledge that fact because I'd been so anti-gurus that it was embarrassing to say I had a guru. But I found that, you know, on this path, which is life, if you have a guide, then why not take that guide to help you? And that's what a guru is. He's just lighting the way for you. Or he's helping you over certain things. And I was just thinking about the question somebody had the other day about how to be in the flow always. And you know, you are in the flow, whether you know it or not. You are in this flow called life. And you're just, I mean, it's, obstacles are going to come, and then it's up to you to choose whether you're going to take them head on, or like water, find a way around them, or whatever. And even when a river is totally frozen, don't forget the water is still flowing underneath. So you're always in the flow. It's just a question of discovering it, which is what we're all here for. Or it's like what Sri Sri says, you're already enlightened. Why are you looking for it? The clouds are there, but be like the aeroplane who goes above the clouds to the blue sky above. So, you know, some of us somehow, I mean, I know I used to, think that meditation was a lot of effort and that you had to try very hard and do things. And then I discovered what Sri Sri always says, it's no effort. If you're making an effort, that's not meditation. It's just allowing yourself to go down deep. It's allowing the feelings to come, because as he says, feelings are going to come. positive, negative, just they'll come, they'll go. Thoughts will come, positive or negative, they'll come, they'll go. But inside you is a place of calmness. Try to find that. And that sort of reminded me about a poem which I love called The House Guest by Rumi. And in that, I wish I could say it, and I wish I had it with me to read it to you. But paraphrasing it, he sort of says, you know, welcome everything that comes to you, whether it's anger, greed, jealousy, irritation, doesn't matter, compassion, love, whatever comes, just welcome it as a guest, honor it, look after it, cherish it, love it. Because who knows what it was sent there to teach. So I think it's what Jaya was saying, you know, just to have a great openness. Learning comes from all sources, and we don't know where it's going to come from. But it's from a song, from a line in a book, from a tree, a stone, a bird, the monkeys that are everywhere. There was a mother monkey with a tiny little baby today, clinging for all its worth to her as she was running around. And they were all hungry, and they were picking up these cones, trying to see whether they could eat them, and they'd put them to their mouth and then spit them out, because obviously it wasn't anything that they could eat. But it was so wonderful just watching them, you know. I think that the other theme that we touched on was sacredness. I think sacredness is in the daily small things. We're looking for a huge big thing, but as Sri says, that only happens on TV or movies, that, you know, thunder, lightning, whatever. But it's really in the small things of life that we don't savor so much. Maybe just your dog coming up to you to be petted, or something else, or drinking tea in tea time and dipping your rusk or your biscuit in it, or not dipping it in it, you know, whatever you like. But it's savoring the moment, I think. And I think that's terribly important. So this is going to be a very eclectic talk, because I'm sort of going on all the things that we've been, you know, mentioning. And if you want to stop me on the way or ask a question, please do so, okay? There was something else that came up was about death. And I think that, you know, in one of our epics, Yudhishthira, who is meant to be the very wise one, was asked, what is the most bizarre, odd, weird thing in this world? And the answer he gave is that death comes to everyone, but everyone thinks it's coming for the other, not for themselves. And we go through life like that, you know, thinking it's for other people, or I'm too young, or I think for me it's now I'm getting older, wow, it's coming nearer. But I think that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said that if you could only realize that death is there for everyone, and that it can come at any moment, you don't know when, you don't know where, you don't know when or how. So the thing is to make every day count, to live deeply in that day. That day means something. And I suddenly thought about a Hindi movie. And you know, movies can also teach us a lot of things. We make a lot of fun about Hindi movies because they have everything in them, what we call a masala, you know? It's song, it's dance, it's love, it's villains, it's, you know, the whole lot. But there's this one lovely song where this man is dying of cancer, and he's feeling very sorry for himself. And then this fellow, who's meant to be a ruffian, a gunda, or whatever, he comes And he brings somebody with him, and they sing a song, which is, in Hindi it goes, Marne se pehle jeena to seekh lo, which is, before you die, at least learn how to live. You know, and that's what Kubler-Ross was saying, that live every day, learn to live every day, fully, openly, completely. And I think that's very important, but along the way, we get stuck in so many things, you know. Jia was just mentioning, saying, how many years have you been married? 55 years, and Ranjit was saying, we deserve the Victoria Cross. And I tell you, relationships are the most difficult, and they are our biggest teachers. Because our relations, they all know how to press every single button that we have. You know, every single button, they know what to do. And we just lose it. You know, we've gone for retreats. I've gone for 25 years of retreat, and then somebody presses a button. And as Shri says, I become like a vending machine. Press the button, out it comes. So, you know. And I don't know, it's sort of like in our relationships. I mean, somebody once said to me, have you ever felt like divorcing Ranji? And my answer's been no, but I've sometimes felt like murdering him. I don't know whether he's felt like murdering me. Divorcing him, no. So, you know, that's the way families are. And I don't know, you know, it's, my children think we're freaks for coming for Vipassana retreats and doing this. They just think, oh God, they've gone over the top and they've been doing this for 25 years and they still lose their temper. So what's the point of them going there? But I think there's more awareness that comes. And I think that our Ranji and I, we have servants, and they've been with us for more than 20 years. One of them's been with us for like almost 35 or 40 years. And I think one of the nicest things that they said recently to me was, Mem Sabji, you don't lose your temper the way you used to. So it wasn't that you don't lose your temper at all, it's just that not the way you used to. So, you know, that's part of how it is, how families go. And I think that one of the things we have to learn to do is to accept things as they are. Because it's when we fight them that they become bigger and bigger. Acceptance doesn't mean a passive thing. It's not like, oh my God, it's happened, so what, you know, what can I do about it? Acceptance is, this is the reality of the situation. This is what it is. But having once accepted it, it's almost like surrendering it. And then your mind is clear and you can come up with lots of ideas on what to do. I mean, it's like if a thief came into your home, acceptance doesn't mean that you just sit there and say, oh, well, the thief's come into my home and I let him take the TV, the fridge, everything. I mean, after all, acceptance, I accept. Acceptance, I think, is to say, okay, the thief's come into my room. Now, what can I do about it? I can either pretend to keep sleeping, or I can get up and shout, or I can, you know, there are sort of different ideas that come. And one of the things that I remember was a very dear friend of ours, their son went on drugs, and everyone told them that your son is on drugs, and they wouldn't believe it. They kept saying, our son is not like that. And they could see a lot of things that were happening that showed that he was. but they were refusing to accept that situation. And that boy later, I mean, he died, so on drugs. But I think that a lot of us, certainly I know that for a long time I would, and I still do, I fight a lot of things and not accept them. My daughter used to call me a control freak, and believe you me, I used to say, oh, I do this only for your own good, but, or I say this, and then one day I realized, oh, what she says is true, I am a control freak. And then she said it once to me, she said, oh, Mama, there you go again, you're a control freak. And I looked at her, and I think she expected me to say what I normally did, which was, no, I'm not. And I just looked at her and I suddenly said, you know, you're right, I am a control freak. And suddenly we burst out laughing, you know? And then it was so light. It was no longer that heavy thing, you know? And one of the other things we were talking about is failure. Failure is very heavy. It's almost sort of, for me, it's like a metal, sort of has a heavy metallic feeling to it. And I think that's because it's very judgmental. Failure is, I think it's like, it's got a lot of things to it. I was thinking about it the other day after we talked about it. And I thought to myself that in failure, there's a lot of things that are pulling or pushing, and I gave them different names. One is a perfectionist. The perfectionist wants everything to be just perfect, you know. And if it's slightly, if a comma is missing or anything, then it is like, oh God, woe betide. I mean, how could you overlook that comma? Sort of thing. And then there's another one who's, I think, is this, what we all call the inner critic. And the inner critic is saying, oh, how could you have done that? You know, didn't you see that? How stupid can you be? And then there's a person who always wants to please everybody. And so if I'm a failure, I'm not really pleasing anybody, not even myself. So failure becomes heavier still. And then there's somebody who's pushing me, go on, pushing yourself. But I think that failure has a lot of things to teach us. And one of them is to be able to use your discrimination. What do I learn from this? How could I have done it better? It's, I think, is it time for me to make a U-turn? Or should I go keep on doing this until I succeed? Or do I do something different? But I think there are a lot of questions, and one needs to be open to all these questions and not get stuck with failure, not get stuck with all these voices that are screaming, oh, you're an idiot, you're a fool, you're this, you're that, because then we're fighting it, we're not accepting it. We're not accepting the fact, okay, I failed. And then, so what? No big deal. If you talk to a lot of people who are very successful, you'll find that most of them have failed many, many, many times. My mother used to get very irritated because I hated maths and she wanted me to do maths. And I would say, well, even Einstein failed mathematics. And she would say to me, don't talk back to me. But, you know, it was a way of just saying to yourself, okay, it's okay to fail. Why make such a big deal out of it? And don't allow all those voices inside you to be harshly criticizing you. Just learn and move on. Sri Sri says that we look at things a bit, I don't know what else to say except to say arse about face. which is, he says, the I mean, he didn't say those words. Those words are mine, but still. But he said that, you know, yesterday, whatever happened yesterday, which is the past, that is destiny. Take that as destiny. What is to happen tomorrow, that is choice. Because what you do today is what is going to make your tomorrow. And he says, unfortunately, what happens is people think that what is going to happen in the future is destiny, and what happened at the past is choice, and therefore they regret it and then feel guilty about it and then feel bad and say, if only I hadn't done this, which again brings me back to failure or regret or anything else, if only I had taken this choice. But how do you know? If you had taken that other path that you think you should have, maybe that would have led you into worse circumstances. How do you know? Is the mind playing tricks again? Saying, oh, that would have been a better way, but you don't know. So it's better to leave the past and say, okay, that happened. It's a happening, it happened. Let me live today fully, as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, live that day fully. Make the most of it. Enjoy the small details. Enjoy the tea. Enjoy the food. Enjoy your pets. Enjoy these beautiful surroundings. So I think that, as that old saying says, whatever you resist persists. So if you keep resisting, then it will persist. But if you do whatever you do with your 100% and give it all you have, then I don't think you can have any regret. That's my personal feeling. What do you think? Because you've given it your best and it didn't work out. So what? It's like running a race. If you gave it all you had and came last, you wouldn't feel regretful because you know that you did your very best. But if you came second and knew that if you'd put that little bit more effort in, you could have come first, that's when you feel the regret. So if you put 100% into whatever you do, then I don't think there is any regret. What do you all think? Any response? That's my feeling, that, and that do whatever you do with passion. Don't be indifferent. Be passionate about things. For me, equanimity doesn't mean indifference. It doesn't mean, oh yeah, it can all happen and I'm fine with it. No, I think it means able to find the good, to be able to celebrate, to... But let me give an example. Just recently we had the World Culture Festival, which was sponsored by the Art of Living, and there were 155 countries that took part in it. And it was a celebration of peace, of harmony, of one world family, of bringing people together for understanding and things. But it nearly got derailed. And it nearly got derailed because Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe wrote and said, even though he had not been invited, he wrote and said he would be very happy to attend the World Culture Festival. And people, countries of Europe and America, when they heard this, said, if he's coming, we withdraw all our cultural performances. We're not taking part in the World Culture Festival. So here was this whole thing. I mean, what do you do? Because here's a man who's invited himself. But if you say no to him, he'll take it badly and may take it out on people in Zimbabwe who may be art of living people or maybe Indians or somebody else. On the other hand, if you have him come, then there are all these people. Meantime, the president of India, who had said he would give the valedictory address, wrote a letter saying that he regretted he could not come. So all of us who had been sitting and working hard were feeling very disappointed that the president of India wasn't coming. And Sri Sri said to us, celebrate, be happy he's not coming. And we all thought, is he going mad or what? And he said, perfect answer. And he phoned Mugabe and he said, do you know, the president of India is not coming and I do not think it would be worth your dignity to come if the president of India doesn't come. And Mugabe said, you're right, I don't think I'll come. And so it got saved. And you know, here we think about things as being horrible or disappointing, but who knows, there could be something to celebrate. You know, just a way of looking at things, of changing one's attitude. So I think that, you know, all these things are terribly important because we sometimes become so heavy with something, especially relationships, you know, we get very bogged down with them. I remember somebody gave me the book, A Cave in the Snow, about Tenzing Palmo, who spent 13 years in a cave in the snow. And everybody said how wonderful, and I was going through a terrible crisis in my life, and I thought I would change places with her any day to get away from these relationships, from this guerrilla warfare that goes on within a family. But, because it's so easy in a way. I mean, yes, you've got the elements, you've got everything else to fight with, but you don't have this insidious guerrilla warfare that goes on within a family, at least within my family. And so, you know, sort of, it sounded very, very enticing to me at that time. But, anyway, so that was sort of like where I was. I wrote a few points down for myself. I don't know if I remember talking about them all, but I did write them down. Not really about this. I keep a diary for myself, which is actually a gratitude diary, because I discovered that just writing down things at the end of a day about all the things that I was grateful for that day, small and big, somehow helped me in many ways. So I started this a long time ago, and I kept on doing it. So I was writing about some of the things. And oh, one of you had said that attachment was from the mind and love was from the heart. And I thought that was so beautiful. So I wrote that down for myself, and then I was thinking about it, and then I thought to myself, what really is love? You know, we talk a lot about it, but what really is love? And they say love everything and everybody, but I can't bring myself to love the ticks on my dogs, and I can't bring myself to like cockroaches. And then there are a lot of people too I can't bring myself to like. So how do I send out love? How do I send out anything? I mean, do the loving kindness meditation, forgiveness meditation, but still, you know, get stuck with this concept of love. A Buddhist monk friend of mine said, well, you can send out your blessings. So I thought, yes, but do I really mean them when I send them out? You know, I really got a bit stuck on this whole thing about love. So I don't know about you all, but it's a very big thing. And I know that Sri Sri always says that love is your very nature, and that everything wants to be loved, But as I said, I keep getting stuck on that one. I'm not sure that I'm very good at this one. Try my best, but I'm not very good from it. And I loved something I read. It just, downstairs when we're sitting there having tea or having breakfast, Ranji and I, I'm sorry, we keep hogging the two chairs and that small table there. So we apologize to all of you, but we do that. Sitting there, I read this thing by Dr. Stanley Jones, which was, if I remember right, victorious living does not mean freedom from temptations or freedom from mistakes. Think about that. Victorious living. You know, we're going to make mistakes. There are going to be temptations. We're going to give in. We're going to fall down. Somebody gave me a wonderful definition of a saint. They said a saint is not a perfect person. A saint is somebody who keeps falling down but then gets up again and keeps going and falls down again and gets up and keeps going. And I said, I can buy into that one because I keep falling down all the time, but I am learning to keep going at the same time. So remember victorious living. And maybe one day sit down and write for yourselves all the things that you've been good at or done or that you can pat yourself on the back about. I mean, because there are so many things that we don't even remember about. I remember Ranji and I were in Bangkok and we had gone to a mall with our three young nieces to buy them a present. And suddenly somebody came and tapped us on the back and said, we turned around, it was a white person, looked a bit familiar, but didn't know who it was. And he said, you don't remember me, do you? And Ranji and I said, no, sorry, don't remember you. He said, I learned Reiki from you. And it has helped me enormously. And I just saw you and I wanted to come up and thank you and tell you about it. So we don't even know when we do something and what an impact it can have on people. But it does. So do, you know, celebrate that. Learn to congratulate yourselves on that. The fact that you're all here is something to congratulate yourselves about. So shall we clap for that? That you are here? I think that's great. That every one of you is here. And I know many of you will keep on coming here. So, and this reminds me, Tom said to me, he's not here, is he? But Tom said to me, I thought last year you said you weren't ever going to come back to Satpal again. And I said, yes, I did. And circumstances made it, I am here again for whatever. But you know something that I learned? Last year, I was going to take things head on. So I was climbing up this slope and climbing up that slope and getting exhausted. This year, I found a gentler way. I'll come and I'll walk and then I'll rest a bit on the wall. Then I'll walk a bit more and I'll rest a little bit more. Then I'll come, you know, so I keep doing and resting. And that is really a part of our life, if you think about it. Doing and then resting. Resting and doing. The seed that grows, there's a lovely story that I read, and it was Mr. Toad went to visit Mr. Frog, and Mr. Frog had the most beautiful garden, and Mr. Toad wanted a garden just like that. And Mr. Frog said, there's nothing to it. You just take these seeds and you plant them and you'll have a beautiful garden. So Mr. Toad said, great. And he took the seeds and he went home and he planted them immediately. And then he kept looking. Nothing happened. So he put some water and he kept looking and nothing happened. So he started to sing to them. And nothing happened. He sang and he sang. Nothing happened. Then he said, maybe they want me to dance. So he danced and danced and nothing happened. And he kept doing this day and night, but nothing was happening. And he said, oh, frog was wrong. It's not easy. And I'm so tired. I'll go to sleep. And he went to sleep. And he slept and he slept and he slept. And when he woke up in the morning, he saw little tiny sprouts. And he said, why didn't frog tell me that all I needed to do was sleep? Sometimes, you know, we have to do and then we have to rest. So, and things can happen. And that little seed can grow. I mean, we were looking at these tiny little, I don't know what to call them, sort of plants, which are going to become enormously big fir trees. And yet they start from something so tiny. And that's what we all do. We were all tiny and now look at all of us, you know? And so many things happen along the way, yeah? And then, I just remember that. Our belief systems, you know, what about our belief systems that, you know, the other day J.R. said, that Krishnamurti said about truth, and such a large word again, truth, and so relative in many ways, because we all think we are telling the truth, and Renji also always likes to use the example of the moon, and somebody on this side of the moon is looking at it and it's shining beautifully. And so he says, wow, that great moon, it was just clear as anything. And somebody who's that side of the moon, and there were clouds there, says, oh no, it wasn't clear at all, it was cloudy. But everybody's telling the truth, except that we start fighting over our truths. So what is truth? Conscious Pilot was asked that question and he didn't even stay to answer it. He just washed his hands and threw the question back at the, said to the crowd, whatever you want. But, you know, in our Indian tradition, we have a word called Leela. We describe this world, life, everything as Leela. And it's been translated as illusion, and people don't really understand what do you mean illusion? It feels real. These plants feel real. How is it an illusion? And Sri Sri said something that made a lot of sense to me. He said, anything that you can measure, anything that changes, and remember the Buddha always said, everything changes. He says that is relative truth. The ultimate reality of truth is that which is non-changing, which is always there, which you cannot measure, like you cannot measure love. You cannot measure truth. And therefore, that is the reality, that is what truth is something that you cannot measure or see. And it doesn't, the relative truth can change depending upon your perspective. So remember that there's always this relative, and what in Sanskrit and in our tradition is called Sat Chit Anand. Sat is truth, Chit is consciousness, Anand is bliss. And we say that is the real realities are Sat Chit Anand. So And I guess that's what we're trying to get glimpses of when we're all here in the silence, so that we can hear our own hearts and our own selves. And sometimes there's such a clamoring. I know that even after 25 years, sometimes the thoughts are just coming and going. But, you know, as I said, thoughts are just thoughts. They come and they go. Positive, negative thoughts, they come and they go. Feelings are just feelings. They come and they go. When you're watching them, they come and they go. They don't stay. And I sometimes wonder where they're coming from and where they're going, but I don't know the answer to that either. So, any questions so far?
Prabhuji, I'm just curious when you decided to meet your Guruji? What really made you go to meet him?
Because
you said you didn't believe in gurus.
No, I didn't. And you know, since 1982, when Sri Sri first started teaching, I had a French friend who organized a teachings by him in Delhi, and I refused to go because I said I didn't believe in people like that. And then over the years, there were so many of my friends, relatives also, who were following him. And I've seen him, I mean, that French friend still refers to him as Ravi rather than Guruji, because there's that friendship bond from way back when. And so I've seen him grow from being called Ravi to Panditji to Swamiji to Guruji. But I never wanted to do it. And then in the year 2000, Jaya knows these people, Peter and Lola Hansen. He is Danish and she's Spanish, and they're married to each other. But Peter, he was 18 when he first came to stay with us as an exchange student. And then he loved India so much that he would always take a job that would bring him to India. And as soon as that job was finished, he would resign and join somebody else that would bring him to India. So in the year 2000, he had to leave India. And he said that he wanted to do the art of living. And Ranji and I said, absolutely, we don't want to do it. And then he blackmailed us. He said, you're like up my parents, and you're the ones who introduced me to Reiki, you introduced me to Vipassana, you introduced me to meditation, and now I'm asking you one thing, because it's going to be mostly in Hindi, so I'm asking you to come as my interpreters, and you're refusing. So we went. And we did the course. And quite frankly, I thought, well, it's okay, the course, but it's nothing very much. But a very strange thing happened during the course. And the strange thing was that the teacher said to us, write down something that you know is impossible, but will happen in the next 2 weeks. And since I'm a very logical left-brain person, my answer was, but if we know it's impossible, how will it happen? So he said, still write down something. So I said, when is Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, who you believe in, when is he coming to Delhi? And he said, oh, he was just in Delhi and he won't be here for another year or so. So I said, okay. So I wrote down, I will meet Sri Sri Ravi Shankar in the next 2 weeks. And Ranji wrote down, because President Clinton was coming in that year, I will meet President Clinton in the next 2 weeks. So, and would you believe it, about a few days after we'd finished the course, Ranji got an invitation card from the US ambassador saying that he would like to invite Ranji to a small reception that they were holding for President Clinton, because Ranji was the founder president of the Harvard Club of India. So would he come and meet President Clinton, even though Clinton went to Yale and not to Harvard? So there we were, you know, going to meet him within the 2 weeks. And we also received another invitation from a person who didn't know the name. I mean, it was somebody, Kachwa, and I said to Ranji, who's this? And Ranji said, I don't know. So I opened the card and it said, to meet Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. We were invited. So both these things took place within the 2 weeks. And it's in when I met him there that I said to him, I don't believe in gurus, and which I've already told you. But then things happened as they have a way of happening, and it's too long a story to go into, but it was something that you can't put your words to. It was just an experience, but it just Ranji and I looked at each other and we said, I guess he's our guru. So that's how it happened. And we've been followers ever since. Yeah. And I have to say one thing. You know something that he always says? That if you want to know about love, study Jesus. And you will know about love. You'll know a lot more about love than you would otherwise. But you should study Jesus. If you want to know about silence and the mind, study the Buddha. Because nobody has mapped the mind or silence as the Buddha has. And if you want to know about joy, study Krishna, because he will tell you about joy. And that is the one thing that I have learned from Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, is to celebrate life in every way, to obstacles come in our way, and a lot of obstacles have come in Ranji's in my way, but we have learned to smile through them. And it's not a smile which is sort of like, oh, ooh, yeah, let's smile. It's not that. It's a genuine smile, because you learn a lot. You don't learn through success, you know? Success is, okay, it's happened, it's great. But failures and obstacles and mistakes, they teach you. And that's what I learned from him, was to celebrate and be joyful. I used to be a very serious person, but I learned to that it's really, life is so beautiful, and that there's just no way to describe it, and that all you can do is celebrate it. You can just every day just celebrate it. And even through anger, celebrate it. Because anger is again teaching you something. It's teaching you things that you don't like. It's teaching you what's pressing your buttons. And it's teaching you, can I change something, my attitude or whatever. And as Jaya knows, I've been fighting court cases, actually 6 of them, all dealing with the same subject, which is somebody forged my father's signatures after his death. And it's been going on for 13 years. And when it first happened, I actually felt as if I had been raped. But over the years now, when I look at it, I'm blessing every single thing, because what I have learned through these 13 years is totally amazing. So I look back and I bless those circumstances, because, and they're still not solved. Just before we came, I had to be at the Supreme Court on the 29th of March, and the case was postponed to the 13th of April. We go back and we immediately have 3 more court appearances. So the things are still going on, but I can laugh about it. I can smile about it. It's like a seed. When the time is ripe, it's all going to finish. And if it's not ripe, it's going to go on. So why worry about it? It's there. But I can do my best. I don't have to sit there not doing my best. I do the things. I have found that lawyers in India don't do anything on their own. They expect you to do all the work. they expect you to get all the documents together. Or you can turn up at a court hearing and they'll say, have you brought that document? And you say, but haven't you brought it? No. How could you think of coming without bringing it? And you say, but I thought you were the lawyer. This was in my early days. Now I've learned, no, okay, I'll go prepared. I know what I have to do. So it's okay. I have to do it.
Almost write out all the replies.
Yeah, almost out of the replies. So you know, that's part of, okay, so that's the way it works. And you know, it's sometimes it can be very frustrating because you go there and the other side's lawyer hasn't appeared or the judge is on leave. Or, I mean, I remember one saying to, in one of my cases, to a judge, she was an extraordinary woman. She was a wonderful judge and clear and very firm. And I said to her, Your Honor, I know I shouldn't be speaking, because it's the lawyers who have to do the speaking, but may I please speak? And she said, sure. And I said, I think the other side is waiting for me to die because they think that my children are not interested. They won't fight this case. And they think I'm old, I'm a woman, and so. And she looked at me and she says, God forbid, I'll give you 3 quick dates in a row. So I thought, wow, this is great. Well, guess what? Arrived there on the first date and they say the judge is on leave. Those 3 dates never took place. So what can you do? You can't fight City Hall. So you just smile. So yeah, that's it. Anyway, I think that's about all that I wanted to share. There may be more things I may think up later, but for now, so if there are any more questions? Then should we just do something that we normally start with in the art of living, which is chant Om 3 times. Om is the sound which scientists are now discovering. The sound of Ah, Om is the sound of the universe, is the sound of the earth spinning on its axis. And if you look it up on the internet, we'll say Hindus believe Om means God, but it's not just that. It has got a much deeper meaning to it. Many traditions use these sounds in their thing, like Amen is Ah and Ma, Shalom is Ah, Ma. So we have these sounds too, and the Ah and the O become O. That's why it becomes Om. And so if we could just sit up and, or just lying down maybe, but sitting up is much better, sitting up with your spine straight. If we could chant Om 3 times. When you finish the Om part, some people take longer at doing the Om, others take shorter. You can start on the second Om and the third Om, and when everybody's finished the third Om, then that's it, okay? So let's just close our eyes and take a deep breath in and let go. And take another deep breath in and let go. Now take a deep, deep, deep breath in and let's start chanting Om. Oh. Thank you, everyone. In our art of living, we wish each other by the words Jai Gurudev, which means I honor and call upon the Guru inside you, because each one of us has a Guru inside us. So it's not on the physical Guru, not on Sri Sri, but we say Jai Gurudev because it's the Guru inside you. Jai Gurudev.